When the new session of Congress opens on January 3rd, the clock will already be ticking towards the most important set of fiscal decisions that lawmakers will make this decade. Hi, folks. I'm Eric Bain with Reason Magazine. Thanks for joining us on this edition of American Radio Journal. And look, I'm talking about something that's going to happen in January and probably throughout a good portion of next year. And I know you probably have much more immediate and pressing thoughts at the moment. But we had to record this show before we knew the outcome of this week's election, unfortunately. And so what I want to talk about today is something that's going to matter regardless of who won. And at the point that I'm recording this, I honestly don't know. But the decisions that are made between January and the end of 2025 are going to determine the fate of literally trillions of Americans' dollars. Will they remain in wallets and bank accounts and retirement portfolios, or will they flow to the U.S. Treasury to fund wars and welfare? This so-called fiscal cliff is 8 years in the making. What's happening next year is the expiration of the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Not the whole thing, but a significant portion of it. Now, that law, of course, revamped both the federal corporate and individual income tax codes. But those new lower corporate income tax rates were made permanent, while many of the changes to the individual income tax code were temporary. And that includes the higher standard deduction, the expanded child tax credit, and the lower tax rates that have allowed nearly all taxpayers to keep more of their own money over these past several years. Unless those provisions are extended or made permanent by the end of 2025, the higher pre-2017 policies will automatically return, and that would mean higher taxes for just about everyone. Of these many complex and interconnected issues, the individual income tax rates are the most pressing for Congress to solve. Under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, the top marginal rate was reduced from 39.6% to 37%, with rates for the other income tax brackets also falling by a similar amount. The outcome of the 2024 election, which of course, again, I don't know when I'm recording this, that will undeniably shape these negotiations. Whether it's President Donald Trump or President Kamala Harris or, I don't know, President Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Will make a significant difference as these negotiations go on, as will which party controls the House and Senate. Now, both Republicans and Democrats campaigned on promises to extend the lower rates for most taxpayers, but some Democrats have called for a return to the higher rates for wealthier Americans, and neither party is really approaching the fiscal cliff as a major issue, or wasn't approaching it as a major issue in the run-up to the election. There's not really a unified position on either side, for that matter. We've heard from people like Senator Elizabeth Warren that maybe Democrats should just let all of those tax breaks expire in full. Meanwhile, there's been some figures on the so-called new right, including Orrin Cass, who have suggested that Republicans should let the individual tax cuts to expire and should partially undo some of those permanent corporate tax changes that were made in 2017. Fiscal realities will obviously be a factor too. When the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed, analysts projected that it would add to the budget deficit and the national debt, and it did in a small way. But those problems were more easily waved away when the country was running significantly smaller annual deficits, and the debt-to-GDP ratio wasn't reaching levels not seen since the heights of World War II. A full extension of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act would add another $4.6 trillion to the deficit over the next 10 years, according to the CBO. When the economic benefits of those lower taxes are taken into account, the extension would still reduce revenue by $3.5 trillion, and that means you've got to borrow more if you're not cutting spending. That number is according to the Tax Foundation's estimate. With current deficits already approaching $2 trillion annually, lawmakers are going to be forced to confront this permanent disconnect between how much government Americans are paying for versus how much they are getting. And the deficit is going to be an ongoing concern for the rest of this decade and honestly for the foreseeable future. Now, ideally, Congress would offset the continued tax cuts with spending reductions, but in reality, that's borderline impossible since much of the expected spending over the next decade is for entitlement programs that are running on autopilot and the mandatory interest payments on the debt that we've already accumulated. If spending cuts don't happen and the appetite for more borrowing is limited, then taxes maybe just have to increase. But then the question becomes, who should shoulder that burden? And that is, of course, more complicated than we can get into today. The individual tax rates and brackets are only a part of this arithmetic. Lawmakers are also going to have to decide whether to retain the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act's cap on the state and local income tax deduction. Removing that cap would greatly benefit wealthy taxpayers in high tax locales like New York and California, while adding to the deficit. The elimination of that tax credit, which you could do, you could get rid of it completely, that would net $2 billion in revenue over 10 years. And that could help offset continuing some of the other tax cuts. Similarly, they must decide how to handle the child tax credit, which was made more generous by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Simply extending the child tax credit in its current form would cost an estimated $600 billion over a decade. But lawmakers on both sides of the aisle want not just to extend it, but actually expand it again, providing an even greater benefit to families. But that requires others pay more, or borrowing even more on top of that. Now, it would have been useful to have a 2024 election season that was keenly focused around candidates' tax and spending proposals, so voters could be more keenly aware of this coming fiscal cliff and the difficult trade-offs that will be required to navigate it. But that, of course, didn't happen. Optimistically, one might look at next year and the whole fiscal cliff as an opportunity for Congress to bring deficits under control, to restructure Americans' fiscal relationship with the federal government, and to maybe even get the deficit somewhat under control too, while setting up the country for long-term growth. However, this is also a very messy tangle of overlapping political and policy intentions, and it's a mess that frankly would have been difficult to solve even in an era when Congress was less fractured and more serious about policymaking. For Reason Magazine, I'm Eric Boehm. Check out all of our coverage of the election and other important news going on around the country this week at Reason.com, and catch me right back here next week on another edition of American Radio Journal.